It'd be appropriate if at this point we offer some thanks to the staff people who've organized this. Shannon and Valerie, there just hasn't been a glitch yet. And I'd also like to say thanks to all of you for being in here and being in those meeting rooms yesterday, working when outside it's something you're not going to ever get back in the States. It's a real temptation, but you're hanging in there, and we really appreciate that. And I'd also like to say my thanks to the overseas directors and all the rest of the staff who's been here, come here and made all this possible. Thanks to all of you. Now, I do have a couple confessions I have to make this morning. I was planning on wearing a tie to this event today. I was sure I had it packed, and I went to my suitcase where my tie is always supposed to be, and it wasn't there. You can imagine my disappointment. Also, I'm only working on one cup of coffee this morning, so if I'm not too articulate, it's not because I've been drinking, it's because I haven't had my coffee. So, but, you know, in the late 50s, a group of sorghum growers received a contract from the USDA to develop and execute a plan to build international markets for grains, not just sorghum, but feed grains. And they were given to understand that their continued funding was predicated on bringing other commodities into the effort. About that same time, Japan in the prefecture of Yamanashi experienced a typhoon which wiped out much of the agriculture as it existed there at that time. And in response to that disaster, a group of farmers in Iowa donated hogs and corn to Japan and organized the Great Hog Lift to transport them there. Out of both of these activities, the U.S. Grains Council was born. Agribusinesses, seeing the wisdom of foreign market development, joined the council and contributed their resources to developing markets for U.S. feed grains. In the late 70s, then, a group of Iowans, including Tom Doerr and Keith Heffernan, were striving to pass the nation's first voluntary state checkoff on corn. And it turns out that at that time, Owen Newland was involved with the Feed Grains Council. With the assistance of Owen and Darwin Stolte, president of the council, the Iowa corn checkoff referendum was passed by a fraction of a percent. Other state checkoffs followed. Barley joined the cause. And over the years, producer checkoffs became the primary contributors of matching funds, which brought in the larger sums of FAS dollars and ultimately led to the scope of activities that we know today. Eventually, the word feed was dropped from our name and we became the U.S. Grains Council. In the early part of the last decade, the governance of the council consisted of a board of directors of over 100 persons. Every delegate was a member of the board, and that board met only twice a year. There was an executive committee, which comprised about a third of the board of directors, and they only met once a year. At that time, then-chairman Don Jacoby appointed a structure task force out of which was born our current 14-person board of directors. Around the same time, the A-team structure was formed. The A-teams were meant to serve multiple purposes. They're a forum in which the delegates become much more intimately familiar with the global activities of the council. They're a forum in which the delegates, thus informed, can help our members back home understand what the council does. And perhaps most importantly, they're a forum in which members can bring their priorities forward for evaluation by their peers, and then, with the consensus of those peers, be incorporated into the plan of work of the council, the United Export Strategy. But what have we accomplished on these last many years? We've accomplished a lot. And some of you have heard me talk about the different kinds of truths and untruths that there are. There's things that are absolute truth. For example, if you come to Ohio and ask me how much my corn yields, I'll tell you the absolute truth. If you come to Ohio and ask my partner, Mark Schwiebert, what our corn yielded, Mark might tell you a little bit of a white lie. Now, if you come to Ohio and ask my neighbor, Mark Dravis back there, what his corn yielded, well, I'm sorry, but that's just nothing but a damn lie. It's just... And what's the worst kind of lie out there, though? Anybody want to venture a guess? Statistics. I'm sure you've all heard that. But what is it that's so insidious about statistics? Usually a statistic is absolutely accurate, but it still can be misleading. And if you're not careful, and if you don't know what underlies the statistics, they can lead you down the wrong road. For example, there's a statistic that U.S. exports of feed grains and corn have been stuck at around 2 billion bushel a year for the last 30 years. Well, that's absolutely accurate. But if you go back 30 years, where was most of that corn going? Russia, Western Europe. What's happened to those markets? They've gone to zero. So if you believe that exports are flat, why aren't we now only exporting about 800 million bushel of corn? It's because other markets have taken up the slack. Japan, Mexico, Taiwan, Indonesia, South Korea. And where is it any coincidence that we have offices in Taiwan, Japan, South Korea, Mexico? I would propose to you that it's not a coincidence. We don't take complete credit for it. Obviously, that would be foolish. But it's not a coincidence that those markets have taken up the slack. But even then, you have to ask the question, you know, we're here representing our checkoffs and our checkoff contributors. And what is it that I, as a corn farmer, want from my checkoff? I want a return on my investment. And I would suggest that all of you want the same thing. And how do we evaluate that? It's difficult. So pursuant to that, for the last number of years, we've asked Informa Economics to help us evaluate whether we're generating a return on investment to our producers. And their answer has consistently come back that somewhere between $500 million and $900 million a year of farm gate value is being created by the activities of the U.S. Grains Council, that we are moving enough extra corn that we are creating that value. And I'd suggest to you that if Warren Buffett could get that kind of a return and capture the return that we're generating for U.S. farmers, Warren would pay multiple billions of dollars for a company like the U.S. Grains Council. But that's all in the past, and now we have to look to the future. What are our opportunities in the future? Well, it's interesting that this year, in addition to our 50th anniversary, represents a closing of a circle that was begun years ago. The council years ago assisted folks like Tom Doerr and Keith Heffernan in starting their checkoff programs. The council assisted many other states in starting their checkoff programs, and I know that Ohio is one of those, along with folks like Pioneer and Owen Newland's help. Tom went on to become an undersecretary of USDA, and Keith tells me that he simply just couldn't keep a job. But if you look at the jobs that he's had, he's been chief of staff at places like the governor's office in Iowa, for Tom's office at USDA, and for Farm Credit Services in Washington. So we've got a couple leaders here who have amazing credentials and roots in agriculture. And last year, it was my pleasure to start working with these two gentlemen. Now, 2010 represents the 50th anniversary of the formation of this organization. With a historic anniversary celebration under new leadership, it also represents an opportunity, not only to celebrate our history, but to contemplate our future before we go charging into it. We need to ask questions. We need to be introspective. Some questions might be, are we offering the right products in the right forms to be competitive in a fast-moving and volatile global marketplace? Are we active in the right markets? Do we have the right member communication strategy in place? Do we have the right communication strategy for customers in place? Is our funding structure as functional as it could be? Is our governance structure, which is still pretty new, and our A-team structure contributing everything that it could be contributing? Is our meeting structure right and appropriate? I'm not saying that there's anything wrong, but we need to ask the questions. We need to take a top-to-bottom look at ourselves and make sure that we know where we want to go and that we have a plan for getting there. This isn't something that we'll accomplish easily or quickly. And I ask you to step back and be patient. We have a new CEO who, experienced as he is, needs time to get his arms around what his assets and challenges are. I suggest that we won't have this process completed by next summer in Boston. What I hope to have in Boston is a framework for how we will go about the process. So we've come a long way in the last 50 years, and we have a long way to go for the next 50. We'll all work together, and we'll all get there. And in the meantime, I want to express my appreciation for all of you who make this possible. It takes all of us. It's an honor and a privilege to serve here. And I thank you for trusting me with the responsibilities you've given me as chairman. But we all know this isn't about Rick Fruth. It isn't about Tom Doerr or Terry Venduska. It's not about any of us as individuals. It's about what we can do together to move our industry and our world in a positive direction. Thank you.